When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The teacher was very strict, and her husband was an officer at the Felix Dzerzhinsky Guards Regiment, which is the Stasi's personal guards, and she was really socialist.
This is Cold War Conversations. If you're new here, you've come to the right place to listen to first-hand Cold War history accounts. Do make sure you follow us in your podcast app or join our emailing list at coldwarconversations.com. Dirk lived in the town of Bernau, about 15 miles from the centre of East Berlin. Just outside Bernau was Wandlitz, the residential estate of the East German leadership. As a result, Bernau had one of the highest densities of Stasi facilities in East Germany. Dirk shares the details of his childhood growing up in a Plattenbau block of flats where his school friends were children of East German army officers, Stasi officers and Soviet army officers. He shares some fascinating details of school life and visiting the homes of his school friends in Bernau. We also hear how his parents' anti-Soviet view originated with his grandparents fleeing the World War II Soviet invasion of East Prussia, and an uncle who was arrested and disappeared in Berlin in 1945. The battle to preserve Cold War history is ongoing, and your support can provide me with the ammunition to continue to keep this podcast on the air. Via a simple monthly donation, you'll become one of our community and get a sought-after Cold War Conversations drinks coaster as a thank you, and you'll bask in the warm glow of knowing that you're helping to preserve Cold War history. Just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate.
Hello there, my name is Mark Franks and I served in the Royal Air Force from 1982 through to 2007. What I find fascinating about Cold War Conversations are the stories and opinions of those that lived the other side of the Iron Curtain over that period. It's truly fascinating to listen to, and keep up the good work and all that you do at Cold War Conversations.
If a monthly contribution is not your cup of tea, we also welcome one-off donations via coldwarconversations.com/donate. I'm delighted to welcome Dirk to our Cold War conversation.
I was born in a town called Bernau. Bernau was a town that had about 16,000 population at this time. And it was about 16 miles to the center of Berlin. It was a town surrounded by Soviet army bases, and there were a couple of East German army, the NVA, were based.
Who else was in your family?
So in my family, there were me, my brother, my mom and dad, and my mom and dad's parents.
What was the view of the family of the East German state?
It wasn't really good. It wasn't the best, so they didn't like it. But it has some reason dating back to 1945, really. Yeah. So it was my grandma. She had to escape from East Prussia, from the Russians. And my granddad's brother, he got arrested in the middle of a day somewhere in Bernau, and he's never been seen again. He got arrested by the Russians. They probably took him to Siberia. He tried to find it out later via the Red Cross and couldn't find anything. So that's where it actually all started to be against the Russians and all the communism.
Where in East Prussia were your relatives from?
Near Königsberg,
okay.
Which is today Kaliningrad.
Yeah, it's part of that Russian enclave.
Yeah, My grandma, she escaped with the last, very last ship out of Königsberg to Hamburg. That's where she escaped to.
Wow.
So the ship before, I think the ship before was called the Gustloff, and I think it got hit by a Russian torpedo.
That's right. I think the Wilhelm Gustloff is the worst maritime sort of civilian disaster, as you could say. It was sunk by a Soviet submarine, but it was very overcrowded, I think.
And she was lucky that she missed that ship. And she came then, her later husband lived in Berlin, so she moved to him. She met him in a war, and he told her to come to him, and, and they started living a life together, and they're now.
Even though that was in the Soviet zone,
she
decided to stay. But at that point, there were no frontiers, so she could leave quite easily if she wanted to.
Yes, yes. She escaped first to Hamburg and moved then to Bernau, to my granddad. And her sister stayed in Hamburg. She had her husband already in East Prussia, and they moved in Hamburg, moved to Hamburg.
Was her husband in the army during the war?
Yeah, my grandma's husband, he was in the army. He was first at the Eastern Front, which is these days Ukraine, round about the Donetsk. And he got wounded there and sent home to hospital in France. And then D-Day came along and the British took him prisoner of war, and he stayed for a while in Hull, in England.
In Hull, in England,
and
wow.
He remembers that people were actually quite nice to him. He could get out of the prisoner of war camp, could go to the pub. So he stayed there for about 6 months, and then he moved back to Germany.
Wow, that was a lucky escape for him.
Yes.
Because the Eastern Front was never going to be good news. You said one of your relatives was arrested in 1945 in Berlin. Was that by the Russians?
Yes, that was my other granddad's brother, and he got just arrested in the middle of Bernau in broad daylight for no reason. He tried it then, I think, in the 70s via the Red Cross to find them, but there weren't any records, nothing.
What did your parents do for work?
My mom, she was a secretary in a big factory. They were making circuit boards, the material. And nearly everyone in Bernau of the civilian population worked in that factory. And she worked as a secretary. And my dad worked as a car mechanic, which he learned just like my granddad. To my granddad, I have to say, he worked as a master mechanic at Mercedes in West Berlin. He was a so-called, what we call, a Grenzgänger. A Grenzgänger was a person who lived in East Germany or East Berlin and worked in West Germany or West Berlin. And he would earn hard currency, obviously, and he had a better lifestyle. He could had access to Western goods, and he could change the West mark into the East German mark for a higher course, and could buy more in East Germany. And then 13th of August 1961 came along, and overnight they closed the wall, and I think it was a Sunday, and he couldn't go to his work in West Berlin anymore.
So what happened to him then? I mean, I presume the East German authorities weren't happy about Grenzgängers.
No.
So what happened to him then?
He had to look for another job, and he ended up as a maintenance engineer in that factory in Bernau, in that where he worked. And he was a maintenance engineer there till he retired in the 70s. And then he could actually go back and forth to West Berlin, and he would get from West Berlin and from East Germany a pension, a West Berlin pension. So he had access to Western money, yeah. But he couldn't do much with that, couldn't buy many things because just East German custom would take off him.
Once you became a pensioner, the East German government allowed you to travel to the West.
Yes.
Mainly, I think, in the hope that you would stay there and then wouldn't be a burden on the East German government.
They didn't bother because they lost the workforce, so it wasn't of any use. They wouldn't have bothered. But I think every pensioner was allowed once a month to go. So they had restrictions too.
Okay. Yes. I wasn't aware of that.
Yes.
You mentioned you had relatives in the West, in Hamburg. Did they come and visit you?
Yes, I had in Hamburg. That was my grandma's sister. They would visit us once a year, and she would, my grandma and granddad would go once a year or twice a year. And my dad had a cousin in West Berlin, and she would come monthly basis, often, quite often. She was very wealthy. She had a company, her own company in West Berlin, and she came quite often to us.
And was that a highlight of the month when she came over?
Oh, yes.
So what did she bring you?
Absolutely. She brought all sorts of food, of clothing, kids, for us being kids, lots of toys and things like that. And every time she came, it really annoyed me as a child. Yeah, she said, "Oh, I've just been to South America. You must go to South America." We said, "Yeah, we can't." And she always said that, like, and she always came with big Mercedes, and it was always amazing when she came.
What did the neighbors think of her showing up? Were they jealous or?
No, actually, it was apartment block, so we didn't have much contacts to each other. But I think it was probably noticed because in every house there was at least one family, was Stasi. And the funny thing was always when we got visitors, any visitors, and they stayed there more than one day, they had to sign in the house book and sign in and sign out.
So were you living in Plattenbau?
Yes, in Plattenbau. Yeah. It was a big estate. It was called the Pushkin Estate. And these were long blocks of flats. Each was probably 300 meter long, up to 300 meter long. And they were all in order. In certain blocks, there were only people living, working at a certain, like, at a certain base or certain Stasi. They were all put in order. But I know that from a friend of mine who was a major in the NVA. And he explained to me that is because we can keep ourselves to ourselves. So even if we would mix with civilian, there could be any information out. And also if there is an alarm or whatever, they could collect them all at one point. That was the reason why they put each company, each army base in one block.
And you said you didn't really have that much contact with your neighbors.
No, because our block, that was just like normal working people. I had some contacts because some of the children, we went to the same school, same class, so played with them. But so the adults, they didn't have much contact, although there was something like called a Hausgemeinschaft, which means house community, and they would like partying together and do things together. But that only existed in them Stasi blocks and in them NVA blocks. They would do that. And you would also, you could definitely see who lives where when the 1st of May was on. The that was the number one holiday in East Germany, the day of the workers and farmers. You could see that because on them where the Stasi lives and the NVA, they would have all flags out of the window. And our block, only a few, so you could see that.
What was schooling like for you?
Schooling was the first 2 years was fine. We had a form teacher who had her own business. She had a funeral business. They still had it today. They had a big dynasty of it. And that was sort of okay. We were like mostly children from families, normally working families. So that enjoyed it. And then in year three, the class split. They split it. The better pupils, they would go in a special class learning Russian from year three.
Hi, this is Rhonda in Virginia, and I support Cold War Conversations because I think the work that Ian is doing is critically important. I think it's vital to record the firsthand accounts of people who lived and experienced the Cold War because it illustrates history in a way that a book never can. So thank you so much for the podcast. It's my favorite podcast, and I look forward to it every week.
To be like Rhonda and help to preserve these incredible stories of the Cold War, as a monthly or annual supporter, you'll be able to listen ad-free, you'll become one of our community, get the sought-after Cold War Conversations drinks coaster as a thank you, and you'll bask in the warm glow of knowing that you're helping to preserve Cold War history. Just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate to find out more.
Us, the rest would learn Russian from year five. So, and I came then in a class where us, the working class, the normal working children, they were in a minority. Majority were all children of either East German Army or Stasi. The teacher, she was very strict, and her husband was an officer at the Felix Dzerzhinsky Guards Regiment, which is Mielke's, the Stasi's personal guards. And she was really strict, really, really a socialist, communist.
A true believer.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's when the trouble all started. Yeah. These children from Stasi and NVA, they would always tell on us everything what we said. They would tell the teacher. We were always in trouble. And because of my Western relatives, my clothing was Western. And I remember I came in with a Levi's jeans and got told off by the teacher in front of all the class what I'm thinking wearing these Western clothing. And she wrote it in my diary. There was a diary where they wrote everything in, what we did wrong, and wrote in Dirk's wearing openly Western clothes, and please stop doing that, letting them go in Western clothes. And my mom just laughed and write something nice to her. Also, anyway, it turned out that I could wear them jeans, but I had to take the Levi's label off. And even worse thing happened to my brother. He had a Bundeswehr Parka. What the
Whoa,
Bundeswehr.
Yeah.
And on the left arm, there was this West German flag on.
Yeah.
And he went to school and got pounced by the Staatsbürgerkunde teacher, which is citizenship is all the propaganda. Mm-hmm. And he dragged him into the office and cut with a razor blade cut a square out of his arm, and he came home and crying and looking at that big square. And my mom just went to the school and complained to the director and all that. And it ended up they had to buy him a new Parker, East German Parker.
Well, your mum sounds, she was really feisty then with the authorities.
Oh, yeah, with the teacher, yeah. When they brought it too far, then she would go, or my dad would go, yes. So I would complain, yeah.
Your family must have been seen as troublemakers then.
We decided not to make trouble. We decided more like being passive and not participating in anything. Like I was member, like everyone, member of the Young Pioneers.
Yeah.
And there were these afternoons in a spare time, and it was all political and the propaganda. And they found out that we watched Western TV and spoke openly in school. And they dragged me in front of all of them in that pioneer afternoon, and just blasted me for it. And I went home then to my mom, and she said, "Well, it's your spare time. You don't need to go. Don't go there anymore if they just upset you," which I didn't. And the big thing was then, there was 1st of May, and participating in a demonstration was like mandatory, like what they said. Yeah? Mm. And I went that one 1st of May, didn't go there. So I was worried. So asked my dad, what should I say? They will ask me on Monday. And he had a very dry humor. Yeah? And he said, "Well, just say your aunt from West Berlin was here to visit," which I did. I went in and just said that in front of class, and they were like blown away. And the teacher went all red over her face and really shouting at me and throwing me out of the room. So,
wow!
But from then on, when I embarrassed her in front of the class with that, she really lost it. Then it stopped, and she tried them different ways to bully me, like excluding me from any things, like when we went out, school days out, like on a hot summer's day, everybody could swim. I wasn't allowed to, or things like that.
She would try and exclude you from things she knew that you would enjoy.
Yes. A punishment, like a covered up punishment.
And you said that the Stasi kids and the NVA kids would tell on you to the teachers about things you were talking about.
Yes.
Was that mainly stuff around Western TV and stuff you were picking up there, or what was there
other? About Western TV, and also when the Russians marched into Afghanistan, I was talking negative about it, and they were telling the teacher, and teacher was telling me off and telling me like their reasons why they marched in.
I can imagine that wouldn't have gone down well at all. Were you told at home not to mention certain things around other people?
Mom and Dad said, okay, being passive and not doing their socialist stuff, that's okay, but watch what you're saying. Especially my best friend was in the NVA, and my second best friend, his dad was an officer in the Soviet Army. So they just said, just watch what you're saying and you'll be all right.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did you reconcile that friendship with those kids against what their parents stood for? You just thought, well, he's a nice kid.
Yeah, yeah. We were like friends since we were like 5 years old, played on the same playground. So it didn't matter, didn't make any difference. So obviously, when I came to their homes, I wouldn't be like making like a big Western show off. I would never do that. And I would never criticize them or question that. And so they would never ask me or criticize me of my beliefs or of our more Western like lifestyle. Yeah. They wouldn't do that.
What was it like visiting their homes? I mean, how did their parents treat you there?
Oh, they treat me just like a normal, like a friend. They knew where I lived because everyone was living in that estate. So just normal. It's normal. They would never say anything on my, whatever my clothing was or whatever. Yeah.
And with those friends, did they ever mention that they watched Western TV or not?
My friend whose dad was in the East German Army, because they lived in this block where only army lives, the same in the same unit, the same base, they couldn't watch Western TV. They would have seen it straight away the way the area was pointed, the TV antenna, because ours were pointed to West Berlin and theirs were pointed to the East German television tower. So you could see straight away. But my friend actually, he watched Western TV, but had to do that. He had to let down the blackout blind, and he had a portable telly with a room area, and they would watch it and listen with headphones.
Wow. Well, the family would.
Yes.
Oh, that's really interesting.
So very secretly, because if anyone in the house would find that out, they would have been in trouble.
Absolutely.
It was always very secret, and he never really admitted it, though, you know, but I could tell they were watching it. When they came to my house, I made it like Western as possible. Western TV on. Couldn't get them off the telly, actually. We give them like Western sweets and make really the West looking nice. And my Russian friends, it wasn't actually, my Russian friend didn't bother whether it was West or East German TV. They watched just like their Russian stuff, mm-hmm. Russian channels. Yeah.
So your Russian friend was the son of a Soviet military officer?
Yes.
So was this boy being taught in the same school as you?
No, they had a special school. So they had an extra apartment block on the estate, and the base was just right behind it. The base was in front of our house. So when they got to school, they got picked up by a bus and driven somewhere where their school was. They had their own school uniform, just like back in Russia.
So how did you meet him? How did he become your friend?
Because there was a playground, and I met him like when I was 4 years old. We played with him, and his friend came to it. And during that time, I learned to speak Russian nearly perfectly. We became friends and visit each other. Yeah.
So would you go and visit his parents' flat as well?
Yes. And there were huge differences. He came first to us, to visit us. And he was just amazed. We had a three-bedroom flat. And he came and said, "That's all for you? And you got a room, you and your brother got an extra room?" And he couldn't believe that. I didn't think much about it. And that why he's so amazed about that we have just the normal standard of the East German family. However, when I visited his house, I found out why. Because the Russians lived like just like back in Russia, like they would live in Moscow these days. And that was usually that an apartment was shared by two families. Each one would have one bedroom, and the bathroom and the kitchen were shared between. So there were a whole family living in one room, and that's why he was so amazed.
How were his parents when you were there?
His mother was just like, she treated me like if I would be her own child, or like the Russians are. They're really friendly to children. They love children. And the dad was really great. He would take us into the Russian base. The base, what it was a motorized guards regiment. And they would just have trucks, like the mural trucks. And he would take us either to the base, and twice he took us out when they were exercising driving on a big, it was a training area. He take us to the training area, and we could drive with him all day on the Euro truck. But it was quite amazing.
Yeah. Wow, that must have been fun for you.
Oh yeah, I saw them exercising. I saw how the normal soldier was treated, although they were treated really poorly.
So, how did the Russian conscripts live in the base?
My friend's dad, he took us to that base, and then he said, I let you have a look how the normal soldiers live. And we went to the living quarter. And what the Russian bases were, actually, the Russian moved into former Wehrmacht or SS bases, which were around Brno. The Russian just moved in and took it over. And there were still these old buildings from the Wehrmacht. And where the soldiers slept, we went in. That was a huge dormitory, massive. And there were around 100 small beds. And all what a Soviet soldier had was a small bed and a tiny wooden stool, where all his belongings fit on, and their coats and helmets and whatever were all hanging on the wall. It was really poorly. They had no privacy and nothing. And later we went then to eat. So come, I have something to eat. And we got to eat what they eat, actually. And they had three times the same meal a day, and that was gretschka, buckwheat. It's like a buckwheat mash with a slice of bread. Mm-hmm. And if they were lucky, maybe they had a bit of meat in once a month or something, and that's what they were eating. And we had it. The bread was actually quite nice, but that gretschka, that tasted like nothing. That was their diet. I witnessed it also. They had a system, it's called the Devochina, which is, it dates back to the times of the Tsar. The Devochina is the reign of the granddads, mm-hmm. which means that the new conscript, they were treated by the older like slaves. So the first half year they were treated like slaves. And there was one occasion I witnessed, they were like exercising. We were on a training ground, and one of them did something wrong, exercising, slightly mistake. And this older one just took the rifle off him and bunked him over his head and made him then put on a chem suit and run at 30 degrees. Wow. Well, they were really treated really, really badly. So yeah. I witnessed that too. In the Soviet army, it was really dreadful, the treatment, and which led then sometimes some of them escaping, sometimes with weapons, and they were really dangerous. Luckily, I never experienced that, but I've heard that a lot, that things like that happen.
Because they almost became suicidal, so they just escape and then
they had nothing to lose.
Yeah.
I've heard that from one from my dad, because he knew someone from the Volkspolizei, that a Russian took some hostage in a house, in a farmhouse. And the Russian, they just wanted to go in, wanted to storm it, wanted to go in with a tank into it. They managed to stop them and to get this Russian conscript out there of the house to surrender. Yeah, you hear stories like that. And the dad, he take us to the Soviet base. We could buy in the shops called the magazine, could buy in their shop suites. And he would also take us to the living quarter of the conscripts, which really shocked me. Yeah. And yeah, so all the public area, so halfway public area, that was okay for us to visit. Only thing where what was strictly forbidden was behind. There was like a base in a base where they would have the technique and the weapon. That was, they couldn't go there. That
so
was,
the living areas you could go around, but anything where there was any weapons or any equipment.
Yeah, that was heavily guarded, was double barbed wire fenced and guards all around. That never could go there.
Because the Soviets, treated the conscripts really badly. I remember hearing reports of British troops who were in East Germany looking at the state of them, and they were treated very, very poorly.
They were always like at the back of the base. The front of the base were the living quarters. The back of the base, that was always secret military stuff,
Because you mentioned you had a friend who was in the NVA. Did his father show you around the base or anything like that?
He was a teacher in nuclear, biologic, chemical. And he was a teacher. And he would sometimes take us in to show the classroom and show all the charts about an atom bomb and what happens, and showed us a Geiger counter, how it works and all that stuff. So,
wow.
Yeah, he showed us that.
But he didn't take you out in Ural truck on exercise like
that. So because he had to be careful, he had to make sure no one sees us on the base, otherwise he would get in trouble. He was a major. He was there with the NVA since it started. He collected uniforms and told us a lot of stuff about the NVA. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't very like communist. I never heard anything like that. Yeah. But okay, he was also careful in not saying anything.
What was life like in Bernau, having, you know, the Soviet army and the East German army? What was daily life like?
Was actually round the clock. We had also an air base in a place called Verneuchen, which is a little village 8 miles away from us. And they had a big Air Force base, the Soviet Army, MiG-25. And they would fly day or night. They never bothered about people. They would just cracking sonic boom, you would hear. And at night they come in to land right over our estate. Sometimes my dad, he just wouldn't turn up to work next day and said, the Russians flew all night, I couldn't sleep. We had that Russian military base right behind our house. So 6:15 in the morning, you wake up because the Russians were marching to the morning assembly, singing, loud singing. That was the first thing. Yeah. So trucks would go in and out that base. So you would see a lot of Russian soldiers. And from the NVA, actually not too much. So you saw the trucks going in and out. Their bases were out of the city. They were two bases. One was an engineering battalion, and one was anti-aircraft missile base. So they had like the command bunker and all that. But that was, you couldn't see anything. Well, that was guarded, was called Sperrgebiet. So yeah. A restricted area, always behind the forest, so you couldn't see anything.
Bernau is close to Wandlitz, the leaders of East Germany had their residences. Yes. Were you aware that that was there?
Absolutely, absolutely. It was because we sometimes traveled to Wandlitz because we had friends there, and the road leading into Wandlitz was a wide dual carriageway with connection to, with a junction to the Autobahn to Berlin. And every time someone from the Politburo came, the traffic police would just close the road, traffic light to red. Later I knew, all the traffic police, I knew later, they were actually all Stasi in uniform. And you stand there half an hour waiting, and then just a single Volvo comes through, green again. And what I also noticed, one block in our estate, they were all for Stasi in Wandlitz. Yeah. And one of my classmates, his dad was the chef for the Politburo. He cooked meals for Honecker. And every time we would have a day out from school, like walking or going to the lakes, this one would turn up at lunchtime, providing the best sandwiches, things you couldn't see in the shops. And that was his dad providing the catering from Wandlitz. We were aware, my dad always told me that it's Wandlitz where they live. Mm. Yeah. But when we drove past, we sometimes went there to pick mushrooms. All you could see was Sperrgebiet, and you could see this green wall, nothing else. And the roads always leading into these bases, or like to the Waldsiedlung, they always went in as a forest, and then they all went a bend. So you can't see actually a gate or anything. They were all like, that was the standard of all the bases. We also had close by the bunker of the Politburo was built there near close by. Mm-hmm. There were several bunkers for several organizations, but we never knew really anything about it because it was just hidden and heavily guarded.
Yeah, it was only after the wall came down that you discovered that there was this other stuff there.
Yeah, I found out that in Bernau had actually the highest density of Stasi facilities in the whole East Germany. Mm. Bernau, they were all concentrated, obviously because of the Waldsiedlung and the close to Berlin, so... That's probably why it was.
To protect the leadership as well. Did the family ever come under suspicion from the Stasi? Yeah.
Yes, they came. It was my mom, where she worked. Her boss, he escaped to West Germany. And he did that probably with a false passport via a trafficking organization. So we noticed that in front of our house, there were always a car, like a Wartburg or a Lada. Always two guys sitting in, and they were watching us day and night. First, we thought they might watch someone else. So my dad said, right, you look now behind the window and see what happens. I just get out and go up the road and you see what happens. So we watched, and as soon as my dad was walking up the road, they would just follow him. One of them would just walk behind them. So, and when we visited friends in on the estate, a couple of blocks away from us, when we went there, they would park in front of that house. So there was obviously, they were looking for us. And then my dad made jokes with them. He would shine a big torchlight at their car at night from the window. And he even went down, apparently went down once and offering a cup of coffee. Yeah. And then it's suddenly after about 10 weeks, 12 weeks, it stopped suddenly. And we didn't know, we didn't have a clue why, really. And we would only find out later then in my mom's Stasi fire. She had a Stasi fire and there was that all. Listen, it was the Stasi was concerned that my mom was preparing an escape. So, and they tried to find out, and I think they set two IMs on her, and found out that she's selling nothing. The house is all fine, and we are well dressed and all that. They came to the conclusion there's no danger that she escapes.
Did your parents think about trying to escape from East Germany?
No. They had no intention of, no, because we had our flat, we had our garden and all our relatives, the parents, so never thought any escape thoughts, no.
I mean, as long as you kept your head down, yeah, you had a comfortable, yes, life.
Yes.
It was, yes, you know, you were not short of money. You got presents from your, yeah, relatives in the West, so yeah, it was just fine for you.
Yeah. Later, they even let my mom go into her aunt's 80th birthday in Hamburg. And my dad was allowed to visit West Berlin, so it was okay, and they came back. Yeah, it was later. Even though I said to my mom, why did you not stay? You could have taken me later over. But she didn't, yeah, want to. She wanted to stay with her mom and all, yeah, that. Yeah.
Wow. That's quite incredible, considering what they... You know, the suspicions that they had about you, and the fact that, you know, you definitely were, I guess troublemakers is not necessarily right, but you weren't going to follow the regime's line. Yeah.
It was, when that happened with the Stasi, that was 1979, so it was still very strict. When they eventually could go to visit the West, that was 1987, 1988, so it was more relaxed. And I think they did a couple of deals with West Germany to get money, and so they relaxed it a bit.
Dirk's story continues next week with a move to Berlin with his mother, whose new partner is an East German border guard. Don't miss the episode extras, such as videos, photos, and other content. Just look for the link in the podcast information. The podcast wouldn't exist without the generous support of our financial supporters, and I'd like to thank one and all of them for keeping the podcast on the road. If you'd like to help the project, just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate. The Cold War conversation continues in our Facebook discussion group. Just search for Cold War Conversations in Facebook. Thanks very much for listening, and see you next week. not enjoying the ads? Well, you can avoid them by going to coldwarconversations.com/donate. By becoming a monthly or annual supporter, you'll enjoy ad-free listening, become a part of our community, receive the sought-after Cold War Conversations drinks coaster, and bask in the warm glow of knowing that you're helping to preserve Cold War history. Just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate for more information.